Okay, let's read God's word together. This is Mark chapter 9, and we break into that chapter at verse 2. We're just going to read some verses through to verse 9. This is the word of the Lord. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud, "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. And ending at verse 9, the Lord will bless his truth to all our hearts for Christ's sake. Amen. You will know that our theme for worship this year is seasons, as we make our way through the Christian year. And one of the things about seasons is this: seasons pass quickly. I mean, we've had 2 different seasons in the last week. I mean, we had a kind of like late spring, early summer, and then all of a sudden we had winter all over again. So seasons can pass really quickly. And today is the last Sunday of Epiphany, the season of Revelation. That's where we've been for the last 9 weeks. And during those 9 weeks, we've been discovering who Jesus really is by looking at his life and at his teachings and at his miracles and so on. And traditionally, in the Christian calendar, the season of Epiphany concludes with one more event in Jesus' life, the event that we call the Transfiguration. This was the moment, Luke says, in his version of this story, that the disciples saw his glory. This was the moment when they saw his glory. Everybody wants to be there when something special happens. If you were a West Indies cricket fan, which I know is highly unlikely, but if you were a West Indies cricket fan, you'd have wanted to have been at the final ODI match in St. Lucia yesterday. It was Chris Gayle's last ODI game before his retirement from the sport. And yesterday, he scored 77 runs, and you'd have wanted to be there to see it. Now, if you're a cricket fan, you're about to say to me, "But didn't he score 150 just a couple of days before that in one of the previous games? What's the big deal about the 77? He scored 77 runs off 27 balls. He absolutely tore the England bowling attack apart. And it was an incredible end to an incredible career. And what really happened in St. Lucia yesterday was they saw his glory. They saw what Chris Gayle is as a cricketer, an incredible athlete and sportsman. And if you were a fan of the nation that he plays for, you'd want to be there at the time. When you come to look at the story of the Transfiguration, this special event when 3 of the disciples saw Jesus' glory, you wonder what it was that they really did see, these 3 disciples. I mean, the story is a little bit confusing in parts because Luke says that they fell asleep during it. You're thinking, how on earth did they manage to do that? The disciples seem to have it, especially these 3, an incredible ability to fall asleep on really important occasions when they should be awake. But Luke says at some point of it, actually, they were sleeping. So what was it that they saw? Mark says this, we read it a moment or 2 ago. Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. The word that we translate transfigured into English isn't really a direct translation of the Greek word. It's actually a transliteration of the Latin word that was used in the Latin version of the scriptures to translate the Greek word, okay? So it's kind of a roundabout thing. The Greek word is a word you know because it's also in the English language. It's the word metamorphic. It's a geological term. There is a thing called metamorphic rock. Metamorphic rock is a rock which has changed its form through heat and pressure which is exerted upon it. It starts out as one kind of substance and ends up as another. This church is roofed in a metamorphic rock. Slate is a metamorphic rock. It started out as something else, but heat and pressure turned it into what it is so that it can be mined and it can be cut to size and it can be used to roof buildings like this. It's a metamorphic rock. And the word which Mark uses to describe what happened to Jesus that day is this word. Jesus was metamorphosed. He was changed from something into something else. What changed? Well, again, when you read the story, it's really hard to get a grip on that. Because those verses we read from Mark a minute or two ago appear to say that the only thing about Jesus that changed were his clothes. We read these words, his clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. In that sentence, Mark refers to a particular kind of trade which was common in the world of his day. I'm not sure how common it is anymore, but he talks about the trade of a fuller. A fuller was one of those people who took pretty cloth that had just been manufactured or made that would still be stained, and he took that cloth, and by the skills and the chemicals which he had learned to use, he would turn that cloth from a fairly basic cloth into something that was bright white. He used different things. One of the things he used was some clay called fuller's earth. You can still buy it. I did a wedding a year or so ago, and I went to the wedding in a brand new pair of shoes, and the people at the wedding, I need to be careful because they might be here this morning, thought that it would be a brilliant idea to put candles in small glass jars on the ground beside the rows of seats. Okay, the wedding wasn't in this church, it was in another building, okay. And of course, I managed to do the inevitable. I'm walking up the aisle, talking to somebody, not really looking where I'm going. I kick one of the jars and I spill wax all over my brand new pair of shoes. I couldn't believe it. And then, you know, what do I do? Do I wipe it off now or do I let it go hard and then take it off? I don't know what to do and there's nobody here who can tell me, so I let it dry, which was obviously a mistake. And the shoes were very basically ruined. So I go on Google and I Google, how do you get the stain of wax out of leather? And it said, fuller's earth. Okay, so I order some. Amazon have it. Of course they do. It comes. It's just like clay. You mix it with water. You put it as a paste on your shoes. And hey, guess what? It takes the stain of wax out of leather. Fuller's earth. And Mark says that what happened to Jesus that day was like a fuller sprayed him with fuller's earth and then washed it off. And he was whiter than you can ever imagine when he finished. In fact, Matthew says in his version of the story that it was as if Jesus' clothes became luminescent. Not so much as if the light was shining on them, as that the light was shining out through them. On top of that, Matthew and Luke say that his face changed too. His face shone like the sun. In other words, he was glowing. As they looked at Jesus that day, he was the brightest object within their horizon. Brighter than the surroundings, brighter than the sun, brighter than everything else they could see was the glory of their friend. And it scared the living daylights out of them. That's not what we usually think, you know. But that's what the text says. Peter didn't know what to say. They were so frightened. So what kind of epiphany is it? Which is basically indescribable, because so far I've given you everything the text tells us about it, and it tells you very, very little. Whatever they saw, they struggled to put into words, obviously. What kind of epiphany is it that is virtually indescribable and terrifying at the same time? Well, I'm not sure, but Jesus complicates things a bit further, because at the end of the story, on the way back down the mountain, we read, as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So what they saw, they struggled to describe. It scared the living daylights out of them. And Jesus said, it's an epiphany, it's a revelation of who I am. You're not allowed to tell anybody about it. What kind of a revelation is it that you're not allowed to tell anybody about? One of the disciples who was there that day, who saw the glory of the Lord, was John. John later wrote a gospel. This story is not in John's gospel. He never told it. Not only then, but not even when he sat down to write the life of Jesus. The story is not in his gospel. Can you believe that? Well, you can, if you see what was really going on here. You and I can never share what the three disciples saw that day, not this side of the glory. But what we can share is what they learned. And here's what we read in the text. Then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud. This is my son whom I love. Listen to him. You see, something that happened that day which could have eclipsed Jesus altogether. That was the fact that Moses and Elijah showed up. Now, we read that and think, well, it's Moses and Elijah, big deal. But for Israelites in Jesus' day, these three men, Peter, James, and John, were standing in the presence of the deliverer, Moses, and the prophet, Elijah. These were the people who were formative, who were essential to all they were and all that they believed and their history as a people and their relationship with God. And here they were standing in their presence. And the obvious kind of thing to draw from that, first of all, is you'd want to concentrate on them. And secondly, you'd imagine that they had shown up to kind of give Jesus a bit of support, because he would need that, obviously, from the heroes of the faith, the great men of the past, Moses and Elijah. That's what you would suspect might be their feelings at that point in time. You see, it would be a bit like what's happening in May Street on Palm Sunday, God willing, if we manage to get all the work done in the next 5 weeks. So we're going to be gathering there, and with the folks from Central, Murray, the General Assembly is going to be there, you know. But just imagine for a moment if we showed up on Palm Sunday, and just before the service was about to start, in walks Henry Cook. Okay, don't look at me blankly like that. Henry Cook was the man for whom the church was built in 1829 to bring him from Killaloe to Belfast, because he was the star. He was the big name. He was the leader of our denomination in that day. And he has an incredible story. He is a part of our past. He was the person who was chiefly responsible for the existence of the General Assembly. He reunited the denomination from its divisions and brought it together. And that building was put up just so he could come and have a place to preach in the center of Belfast. So here we are, Palm Sunday 2019, just about to start the service. Moderator's about to get up to open the service of worship. In walks Henry Cook. Who's everybody going to look at? They're going to look at this guy. Whoa, we didn't think he'd turn up. How is this possible? Everybody want to know what he had to say. Be really interesting, you know. Dear help this guy. He might as well pack his bags and go home. And that's what it might have been like on the mountain. Jesus was here, but hey, Moses and Elijah were here as well. Except for the fact that it was Jesus shining like the sun who caught your eye and not the other two. It was not that they were there to affirm him. It was there so that the disciples could, they were there so the disciples could understand something really important. The cloud descends and the voice of the Father speaks. This is my son whom I love. Listen to my son. What is the Lord saying? Here's what the Lord is saying. If you want to understand me, don't start with Moses and Elijah. Start with my son. Where is the light coming from? Who is it that eclipses everything else in creation and the special visitors present on the occasion? It is Jesus. And what is God saying? God is saying, look, here is the moment of time. If you want to understand me and my purposes, don't start with those two guys. Start with this one. Like the writer to the Hebrews says, in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. If you have seen by a brighter light, why would you use a dimmer one? I used to have a 7-year-old Audi A5. It was semi-dangerously near to being the love of my life, which my wife found very annoying, and eventually I had part company with it, okay. But old though it was, all right, that was it on the day I said goodbye to it. Old though it was, it had xenon headlights, okay. The car I replaced it with has halogen headlights, all right. There is absolutely no comparison between the two. And being somewhat later now in life, good light in the darkness is very useful, okay? And that, old though it was like 10 times better than the lights I have in the car I have now. And having driven with those lights, I don't really want anything else because you can see so clearly. It's such a daylight-like kind of light that they produce. Jesus is the brightest light in the universe. If we understand, we want to understand who God is, we have to start with Jesus. That's what the transfiguration is really all about. What the disciples saw that day, whatever they saw, is more or less locked away from us. Their attempt to describe it contains virtually no content whatsoever, other than it was bright. Whatever it was they saw, we get no access to that, not now. But we get access to what the meaning of what they saw is, the meaning of what they saw is that this is the place to start. This is my son whom I love. Listen to him. If we want to know who God is, we've got to start with Jesus. He's the brightest light in the universe. We don't get access to the transfiguration. Only three disciples did. Jesus never intended for us or any of the others who followed him to have access to that moment. We don't see the glory of God that way, but we do get to see it another way. We do get to see it another way, the perpetual way which the Father has given to us. We get to see the glory of God in bread and wine. In a moment or two, we're going to come to the Lord's table on this Transfiguration Day, on this Epiphany Sunday, when we remember that Jesus is the brightest light in the universe. But we have to come to Jesus by the only way that we have access. We cannot be on the mountain. We cannot see what, for however short amount of time, those disciples saw. It's closed off to us. And even the record barely describes it. But in a moment or two, we're going to take bread and wine into our hands. And we're going to eat and drink them together. And we're going to see the glory of the Lord. Because in a moment or two, the one whose hands we need to hold us, we're going to take into our hands. The one who feeds the birds of the air becomes nourishment for us. The one who gave us life gives his life in our place. That's the transfiguration to which we are witnesses. It's kind of the opposite transfiguration to the one the disciples saw. They saw this guy who looked to them like the ordinary carpenter of Nazareth in all the glory of the presence of God. We get to sit with the only Son of the Father, broken and bleeding in bread and wine. That's the transfiguration that God wants us to see. The three disciples were unable to look because they were terrified. As I look down at bread and wine in my hands, I am afraid to look because I am ashamed. Because the broken body and the bleeding are my fault. Or for me, the prophet Isaiah said, he put it like this, we all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Why is the only Son of the Father broken and bleeding in my hands? Because of me. Because of me. And because of you. And because of all the other members of the human race. And that is the transfiguration. That is the glory of God that the Father wants us to see. Surely there has to be a reaction to that. When God lights up the sun so that you can see him as he really is, so that you can understand this is the access point to relationship with and understanding of the Lord our God. There is no other way in but this way. And when God lights the sun up like that and you see him, in our case, as bread and wine in our hands, there has to be a reaction. I had to go on Friday for an MRI scan. It's the second one that I've had. It's a follow-up to what happened to me a couple of summers ago. And I had the previous one. It was fine. And I had to go to have it repeated then to check and see. The first one revealed that I do have a brain inside my head. And they were so shocked by that. They said, we need to do another one to make sure that that's what it really is. So I had to go for a second scan the other day. Only this time, I didn't have to do this the first time. This time I had to have dye injected into my bloodstream at some point in the procedure. So everything was fine. You know, if you've had an MRI, you'll know what it's like. You go into this big tunnel, this racket goes on all around you, these weird sounds and stuff. You're lying there looking up, you know, into nothing and so on. And then after about half an hour of going through all this, they pulled me out of the tunnel. They put the dye in. And I said to the girl, I was a little bit kind of, you know, I said, are you going to make me radioactive by doing this? And she said, no, it's okay, it's not radioactive. She said, it's just we put this in and it's going to light up what we want to see in your brain. I thought, yeah, some chance of that. She said, it's going to light it up and we'll be able to see it and be able to see if everything's okay. So she put the dye in. She pushed me back into the tunnel. She disappeared out through the door. And the moment that she did, over me like a wave came this nausea, and I thought, I'm going to be sick. And my head's locked inside this thing. I can't move. I can't even get forward. And I'm pressing the button thing like mad. Come and get me out of here. I'm going to be sick. So they rush back in, take it off, and say, let me lie here for a minute or two. I'll be all right. And I was all right, and I wasn't sick. And they pushed me back in and finished the job off. But the moment they lit up whatever it is they need to light up inside my head, my body reacted to that immediately. In a minute or two, God's going to light his sun up for you. He's going to shine a spotlight on him brighter than the sun in the sky. It's going to become the brightest thing within your horizon in bread and wine. And what's your reaction going to be? You need to look at what's in your hand. You need to look at what's in your hand. What will you do? This is the final Epiphany Sunday. The transfiguration of Jesus is always the last story that we think about in Epiphany. The disciples saw the carpenter of Nazareth in the glory of the Son of God. You get to see the glory of the only Son of God broken and bleeding on a cross in your place. What are you going to do with that sight?